Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. Newsom, salama, thank you, and welcome to Juno Afternoon on your public media station, KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also catch us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Quick programming note, next Tuesday, March 31st, join us for a special Juno Afternoon, led by guest host Christina Love and featuring representatives from AWARE, the Child Advocacy Center, and Clinkett and Haida. This hour-long special will cover the topic of sexual violence and prevention. That's next Tuesday, March 31st at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. right here on KTOO. Today, spring is slowly working its way into Juno. And with that, we welcome Ginger Hudson from the Jensen Olsen Arboretum today to share what's coming up in the next few months. A new singing group, Singing for Our Lives, has started in Juno. It's open to all, and the group sings simple songs of resistance, joy, solidarity, and healing. We'll hear from Leslie Wood about the group and how you can get involved. And today, we begin with Megan McMillan. Megan is a Junoite who is working on a master's degree in New Zealand. New Zealand, that's what I said, New Zealand. Her thesis is to explore resident perspectives of cruise tourism here in Juno, including social, cultural, and environmental impacts. And she's in town all the way from New Zealand to survey and research this topic. Megan, welcome to the program. Gunath Cheese for being here. Wasiti, how are you?
Yes, thank you for having me. I'm doing great. It's been incredible to be back in Juno with some lovely sunny weather to welcome me back. Feel very lucky.
Yeah, it is. You've missed some of the snow.
That I have. Not complaining.
We broke the record. It's awesome. So let's talk about your work here in Juno first. Mm-hmm. You came to Juno a few years back, maybe 6-7 years ago, to work with the – what brought you to Juno?
Yeah, I knew I wanted to be a park ranger since I was 10.
Oh, wow.
And when the opportunity to work at Mendenhall came up, somebody said glaciers, Alaska, and bears, and I was in.
You said, oh, my.
Exactly. Exactly. So I came up here. It was supposed to be just for 6 months. And,
of course.
I ended up staying. I was almost at the 6-year mark before I headed for grad school.
So you had already studied sort of outdoor kind of activity like in your undergrad degree?
Yeah. I'm originally from Georgia and I went to the University of Georgia for my undergrad and studied forestry with an emphasis on parks, recreation, and tourism management.
How did you know at 10 years old that you wanted to be a park ranger?
My parents loved our public lands. And let me tell you, I think the junior ranger program has inspired more park rangers than any other recruitment method. So all my junior ranger badges and patches, it just made me decide I needed to have that real junior ranger, well, real ranger badge.
What is it about being a park ranger that you enjoyed so much?
I think people. I have so many good memories with my family on public lands growing up, the Chattahoochee, the Nantahala National Forests down in Tennessee, and just good time, good places, and a place that you can enter that belongs to everyone. The whole public was always such a cool time with my family.
I'm talking with Megan McMillan here from her New Zealand master's degree here on Juno Afternoon. She is working on a survey about cruise tourism here in Juno. So what I'm curious about, Megan, is how did you get to New Zealand for grad school or for grad school?
Yeah, it was a big decision to move across the world, especially from a community I'm so passionate about. But I really moved to work with my two incredible supervisors. Dr. Stephen Espiner is one of my supervisors who works mostly in public lands with the Department of Conservation and Tourism Management in New Zealand. And then my other supervisor, Dr. Emma Stewart, has been working in resident perceptions of the cruise ship industry in Arctic Canada for the last 20 years. And so knowing those two perspectives would be immensely important in understanding the issue in Juneau. It felt like the perfect supervisory fit.
Wow.
So I ended up pretty much going so that I could work with them and learn from their expertise.
Wow, that's great. And you have, how much longer do you have before you graduate?
I graduate February, end of February of next year is the goal. So just under a year to do my analysis and write my paper up.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And are you hoping to do something? What is it the hope that you want to do after you graduate? Do you want to come back to Juneau and work here?
Yeah, I would say that's the goal. I think Juneau is such a unique place because people are really involved in their communities and they speak up for what they want to see. And support each other in our community. And I think that that's pretty rare. So being able to come back and serve a community that I feel like welcomed me with open arms 6 years ago, I would feel really lucky to be able to do that, to work in tourism. I think it's so important to bridge the gap between residents and tourism. All of the literature that I've read for my research shows that that's the piece that determines whether a cruise port or a tourism destination is successful or not, is do you involve the residents? And if so, how do you do that?
Well, that's a good topic because we've had a lot of conversation in this town over the last few years having to do with the tourism industry and the cruise line specifically. So that's really interesting to see what you'll learn here. So you're doing a thesis on this, and what you're looking for is people to take a survey that you have, yeah?
Yes. So I wandered around downtown Juneau yesterday and hung up flyers anywhere that would let me hang one, and I'll be heading to the valley over the next few days to hang up signs, and I'll also be at the fireside lecture tonight at the Visitor Center before it begins handing out QR codes. But it's a 10 to 15 minute long survey that really gauges how we feel like cruise tourism affects our day-to-day lives, how we feel it might affect our lives in the next few years, and then collects a little bit of demographic data so that I'm able to compare if you live in a certain part of town, if downtown versus out at Tea Harbor, are you going to have different perceptions of the cruise industry? And then at the end of that survey, there's the opportunity for you to self-select for an interview. I'm looking for 15 interview participants for about an hour-long interview to sit and talk a little bit more in depth. We've been saying to add color to the numbers. So the survey really helps us get a baseline for how the community feels, but we want that narrative input as well. So I won't be able to interview everyone, but it's been fantastic already in just a day to see how much the community is willing to help.
Yeah, I have the QR code on the stream on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. I'll also link it because it's a long link. We'll put the link on the web post for this episode later. Or you can find a flyer around town and scan that QR code. It's pretty easy to get to. So what are you hoping to find out? Do you already have, like, I mean, obviously from the data, you're going to kind of decide maybe where the thesis takes you, but you have like a hypothesis, right? Like, what is your idea going in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been so interesting because, you know, I moved up here in 2019, the last summer before COVID. I've been here through all the iterations of COVID and the resurgence of cruise tourism in town. And I think that oftentimes, you know, we look at things like a bell curve where the outliers, the super positive or super anti, tend to be the loudest, but more people sit in the middle. So I want to hear people who work in the cruise industry who don't, who whatever you do in Juneau, you have a valid input into this. So I think the hypothesis is that, like most cruise tourism destinations, is that there's not enough resident engagement when it comes to community planning and tourism planning. But I'm interested to see what comes out of it, because that's my opinion as somebody who's lived here. But in doing this project, it's been interesting to take a step back and look at it as an unbiased researcher and not allow my experiences, besides my experience of guiding when is appropriate to, you know, like where to hang flyers, when to come up to do my research. It's been interesting to take that step back and just kind of wait for the data to tell me what I need to know.
So I know you're looking for residents to do this, mm-hmm. like people who maybe are just who live here and are part of it. Are you also going to be talking to like officials and things? Because I do understand the idea, like a lot of times decisions are made through, you know, city government and the tourism industry, maybe without talking to the residents first, maybe sometimes talking to the residents first. Mm-hmm. Like it could be either way, right? So, but are you planning to do that kind of thing too? Like talk to, because you're here for 6 weeks. They correct. New Zealand has let you out for 6 weeks to come to Juneau, right as spring hits, hopefully. And so are you, what are the other things you're going to be doing while you're here?
Yeah, so part of my thesis involves key informant interviews. So I've identified a couple of different stakeholder groups within the community, and I've found four people who are willing to talk to me, one from the city government, one from the Forest Service, one from tourism industry, so an excursion company, and then another one from an anti-cruise ship group. And interviewing those people, it's going to be more general of how do you perceive cruise tourism in this town? And that'll help me to frame the issue as I write my paper, is these are the people who are involved in the decision-making process outside of residents. Mm-hmm. And then the residents will be where I'll focus really a lot of my time and analysis.
And I know you mentioned this to me before we went on air, but this is not, this is a master's thesis. This isn't something that was paid for by anybody. This is just you in your studies trying to have a question, put a hypothesis out there and find out what the answer might be, right?
Definitely, yeah. My travel was funded through Lincoln University in New Zealand, where I'm doing my master's. I have not received any outside funding from any other sources. So this is really just a girl who spent 6 years working at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center and living on Douglas across from the cruise ports who had a question about cruise ships, and I'm here to find out what the answer is.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to be curious about is, so you came up to be sort of a park ranger and do those kinds of work, but then how did your interest in like the cruise part of it come into play? Where did that begin for you?
I think it became understanding how my life changed so drastically at the visitor center depending on the cruise ship schedule. I noticed how my life at the visitor center was changing the patterns of how long it would take me to get to work, whether or not I could go hike Perseverance Trail or it was going to be too busy. And I started noticing it was changing my decision-making process. And I started asking myself, you know, do other people feel the same way? And obviously, other people do feel the same way. Mm-hmm. And so I started asking myself, you know, is there a way that I can answer this question? Or is it just something that will rattle around in my head? And that's kind of where the master's degree came from. I knew this was what I was going to do when I went to New Zealand, and my supervisors were so excited about it.
That's so interesting. I know you mentioned that one of the people you're working with out there at the school is studying, you know, Canada, and that interesting thing. Does New Zealand have its own sort of tourism industry? And what are you learning from that side of the world versus over here?
It's been very interesting because New Zealand does have pretty high cruise ship tourism as well. But it's a lot more regulated over there than it is over here, specifically regarding entries and when and where they're allowed to go. It's also quite dispersed. New Zealand's a very long country. So there's ports in places like Akaroa and Littleton, which are both near Christchurch. But the most interesting thing that I learned was in the 2011-2012 Christchurch earthquakes, the Littleton port collapsed. And so all of the ships that were in Littleton were shipped down to Akaroa, which is a small community. Only about 800 residents live there full time. But they were taking the impact of ships that were coming to Christchurch for 8 years while they rebuilt the port.
Wow.
And so these people would come into this tiny town, completely overwhelm the resources. They would put them on buses and ship them up about an hour and a half into Christchurch to do what they wanted to do there. So it's been interesting to learn that, you know, these issues are the same everywhere. Nobody's immune to having a 100% perfect tourism destination. But if we all work together, hopefully we can inch closer towards it.
We're talking to Megan McMillan. She's doing a study. She's was here from in 2019 working out at Mendenhall Glacier and doing things, and then is now in grad school in New Zealand. She's got a survey all about the idea of exploring residential perspectives of the cruise tourism here in Juneau, including social, cultural, and environmental impacts. There's a survey that you can take. I'll put the image on the screen one more time here for those who are on the stream. It is a link. It's a long link. So do you have a shorter version of the link, like a bit.ly or anything?
Unfortunately, Qualtrics doesn't do that. They said, here's the long link, and that's it.
Here it is. So we'll link that on the webpage for today. You'll also see these flyers around town if you see it. It's a picture of a cruise ship, and it talks about, you know, so don't get waylaid by the fact that it says Lincoln University, New Zealand, because it is somebody who's been here in Juneau and is really curious. So this survey, you said, only takes about 10 to 15 minutes.
Correct.
Is it like multiple choice, or do I get to put my own thoughts in there?
Yeah.
Or what kind of questions are you asking me?
Yeah, so most of it's scale questions, from extremely strongly disagree to strongly agree.
Mm.
And that's for ease of data analysis for myself.
Mm-hmm.
The interviews are where I'm looking for people to be willing to share their opinions. So there are a lot of options and a lot of different questions that I think really allow people to truthfully answer their questions instead mm-hmm. of just picking the thing that matches the most.
I see.
But unfortunately, there is no open answer on the survey.
That's probably best for your research purposes.
Yes.
So if I wanted to be and on the survey you said I self-select, you have a question that says, mm-hmm. Do you want to be interviewed?
Yes. So it says, are you interested in being interviewed? And it'll take you to another page that tells you about the interviews. And it does have a little statement that I'm only selecting 15 people. So as much mm-hmm. as I would love to talk to everyone about cruise ships, unfortunately, my supervisors are making sure that I meet my deadline for a February submission.
Absolutely. And the other thing that I wanted to ask is, when you're done with this thesis, this paper, are you going to publish it? Is it going to be something that we can read?
That's the goal, is to have something that I can publish, ideally in a journal, but also these community stakeholder key informants I'm meeting with, I'll be asking them, what's the best way to receive the data? Mm. Is it for me to send an executive summary to the city that they can use? Is it to put on a fireside at the visitor center? What's the best way for me to disperse this information back to our community? Because it's not going to be the same everywhere. So what's the best thing for Juneau?
It sounds like a fireside chat next summer for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, next winter. Yeah, yeah. That's absolutely great. Megan McMillan here. And how do we is there any way we can follow you and your research before the paper comes out? Is there do you want to give any – is there anything we can follow you on? Is there – you have like a public Instagram that people can follow? No, she says no.
I
just
don't.
Take the survey.
That's something that I never even thought of, was that people would be interested in the process
yeah.
before
well,
things are published.
Well, you know, the BTS, the behind the scenes, like
yeah.
what happens, all those kinds of things. But that's fantastic. Megan, thank you so much
for
coming
me.
In and telling us about this. Megan McMillan here from Lincoln University in New Zealand doing her master's thesis on cruise tourism. You can find out more by going to the QR code on the screen or checking out the link later today on the Juneau Afternoon website page. We'll link it there. I wonder if you could Google it and find it. Would you be able to Google it? Probably not, because it's such a specific long link. I saw the link and it's really long.
Yeah.
Well, break a leg with it. It sounds really awesome. Thank you so much, Megan.
Yeah, thanks.
Coming up, the 51st Alaska Folk Festival is around the corner. It's going to feature about 125 acts on the main stage, and that's just one piece of the much larger production. Beyond Centennial Hall, performances fill the dance hall at the Jack, and a full schedule of workshops added to the mix. Megan, you get to go to Folk Fest while
so
you're
excited.
Here. So how does it all come together? Well, KTOO's Mike Lane spoke with Folk Festival Board President Josh Fortenberry about the logistics behind the festival and what it takes to run it smoothly. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
The Alaska Folk Festival is coming up April 6th through the 12th, and the Alaska Folk Festival Board President Josh Fortenberry joins us in the studio. Josh, the 51st Annual Alaska Folk Festival, it's coming up quick. There's going to be performers from all around Alaska and from all over the lower 48. How many performers are going to participate this year in total?
So, you know, I don't know if I know the exact number of total performers. We have about 125 acts on the main stage, and then about 12 acts in the dance hall at the Jack, and then somewhere around 32 different workshops going on.
How do you get so many performers to come to Juno and perform? I mean, what's the board's process on that?
Well, you know, part of it is just this festival has become kind of legendary among musicians because it's all about the music. It's not about anything sort of commercial or trying to make money or trying to get sponsorships. It's just here for the joy of music. So a lot of people return year after year. This year we had over 200 applications for 125 slots on the main stage.
So how do you select performers for this?
It's a little bit science, a little bit art. You know, we really try when we have this many applications to get as many people on stage as possible. So, you know, it's a lot harder sometimes for us to find slots for all the solo performers. A lot of times we try to get bands up there first. You know, we have a few solo performers, probably 5 to 7 every concert. There's 9 concerts. But then, you know, we're trying to get bands up there so we get as many people on stage as possible. And then for the solo acts, you know, we try not to waitlist people too many years in a row. We do our best to get people up there who've been waitlisted in the past. There's certainly no audition. We don't listen to anyone's music ahead of time. We read their application. We see what days they're available. And that's the other thing, you know, for people traveling, often they're only available Thursday through Sunday. So, you know, there's a lot of competition for those slots, and we do our best to get as many people on stage as we can.
Earlier you said it's not about the money. However, how does Alaska Folk Festival, Inc. pay for and organize such a huge event?
Yeah. So really we have 3 kind of key revenue streams. The biggest one is member donations. So we have a little over 800 members now, and they all, you know, have varying levels of contributions. But they are our primary funder. We sell ads for the program every year. That's another way we pay for some of the festival. And then we sell merchandise. So we have an artist every year who designs our poster. We use that poster art to make merchandise. We sell merchandise at the festival.
I'm glad you brought up the artist because I wanted to ask you about the guest poster artist, Savannah LeCornu.
Savannah's a self-taught artist from Ketchikan, Alaska. She was a recipient of the Native American Fellowship from UCross, where she did a residency in 2022. She created sort of an incredible poster for us this year, which sort of features some Northern Lights and the downtown cityscape of Juneau and some musicians. And we're super excited about the art we got.
In addition to all the performers, there's a lot of people who travel to Juneau for Folk Fest. So do you know how many people typically attend?
We usually estimate that our program gets 5,000 to 6,000 views every year. So that's a pretty good estimate of the number of attendees of the main hall. Now, there are a lot of people who come to town to participate in the shows at the bars around town or just to jam who don't maybe come to the main hall. So probably somewhere north of there. Right now we are working on getting Grant to do an economic impact study to sort of figure out exactly how many people come to town, how much money we bring into Juneau every year, to sort of help the city understand what a big impact the festival has on Juneau.
With that in mind, how many venues are we talking about?
So, I mean, the things that we run really are just Centennial Hall and the Jack. So the board itself puts on the festival that happens here. But there are, luckily a lot of local businesses participate. So this year I know that there's going to be shows at the Crystal Saloon, at Devil's Club Brewing, at the Alaskan Hotel, at the Red Dog Saloon. In the past we've had shows at the Imperial. There's going to be pop-up stuff all around town. I know that, you know, Amalga Distillery always welcomes jammers in there. And you'll see musicians sort of everywhere in every business all around town.
And there's workshops too, correct?
There are workshops. So there's workshops all day Saturday and Sunday. Those take place in Centennial Hall and the Jack. And they feature workshops put on by our guest artist, Willie Carlisle, our guest dance band, the Red Hots, our guest dance caller, Connor. So there's going to be, you know, a really great series of workshops. And a lot of these are put on by people who are professional musicians who are coming to donate their time, who are just attending the festival for fun.
How can the public help keep the Alaska Folk Festival going in the future?
The best way is to become a member of the festival. So the lowest member level is $25. You can now have a recurring donation. That really helps us make sure this remains free, open to the public. All of our workshops are completely free to everyone. But the other way is volunteering. So, you know, no one on the board is paid. Other than the people who run sound for us, no one who's putting on the festival is paid at all. So we have hundreds of volunteers every year who help us set up the stage, who help us sell merch, who help us sort of put on the workshops. So signing up to be a volunteer for the festival is also a great way to help if you can't make a financial contribution.
That was Josh Fortenberry, board president for the Alaska Folk Festival, coming soon It's happening, like in a couple, like 10 days or so. It's coming. So get yourself excited for that. He was being interviewed by KTO's Mike Lane, who you can hear in Morning Edition every morning, Monday through Friday. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA.
Hanson Gress, ka eat with the shoe ye, we ka shook a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin tau khana khaya ha an kakh gnish chish.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. And I'm joined now in the studio by Leslie Wood and Jenny Smith, here to discuss a new singing group, which just sort of popped up like a month or so ago. It's called Singing for Our Lives. It started right here in Juno. It's open to all, and the group sings simple songs of resistance, joy, solidarity, and healing. Gwnaeth chish ha ye adi. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both here in the studio today. Wasi ati, how are you today, Leslie?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us, Boston.
Of course. And Jenny, how are you? Gwnaeth chish for being
doing
here.
Doing awesome. Thank you.
Doing awesome. I love that. Good. I know. A sunny day, right? Like, we got to get out of this snow situation.
It's light outside.
Yeah, it's light. It's warm. It's so nice. So, Leslie, this group, Singing for Our Lives, where's the germ? Where's the seed of this thing? How did it start?
Well, about 2 years ago, I got approached by Jenny here at a protest on the street, and PFLAG had sponsored the Juno Pride Chorus for 22 years, and that folded in 6 years ago during the pandemic. And so it was, you know, kind of like, we need to get started something, you know, something started. And I used to be the conductor of that chorus and was the conductor for 17 years. So I have... you know, connections. but I was thinking a lot about, you know, opening up to simple, you know, not choral music, because that's kind of hard and inaccessible to a lot of singers, just different kinds of music. And so I was thinking about it for a while, literally about 2 years. And a lot of my inspiration has come from, you know, singing circles that I've been in. I don't know if you've heard of the work that reconnects by Joanna Macy, those kinds of things. There's been music coming out of that work, and I've been involved in getting, you know, learning about those kinds of songs. And I really liked the simpleness, you know, the simplicity of the songs, and just they're repetitive. You don't need music. You don't need to read music. You can just show up and sing. It's not like a performance group or commitment group. It's more just getting together to sing. And I really like that idea to get together and sing, to keep each other going through these hard times, give each other support and encouragement and enthusiasm, just to keep up the energy so people don't burn out. So I know there's a lot going on in the news. There's a lot going on in the community. We're all really busy. But this is a way to kind of, you know, feed our souls and feed each other so that we can keep going. And so that's where the idea came from. And about a month ago, three friends, including Jenny, helped get the group off the ground into the world. And so we've been meeting. We've had four meetings so far, and it's been going great.
That's so great. Let's get the details. I'm going to put the flyer up here, but I can give the details. This is every Monday, right? Every Monday night from 6:30 to 8:30.
Yes.
And it's at Dezakatihini School in the music room.
Yes. So we might be moving to the Commons, depending on how many more people come.
Right. Okay.
So
yeah,
we're excited
yeah.
about that.
And this is what you mentioned here, which I think is really important, is that there's no experience required. This is not something where you have to be a professional singer or really good at karaoke or anything like that.
Right.
This is really about, you said, sort of like creative expression, sharing the space together.
Right. And the songs are really easy and accessible. There's, you know, it's repetitive. It's really easy to learn. That's one of my gifts is teaching music. So that's what I love to do. And you know, people might remember the Pride Chorus was a women's chorus. Mm. And we sang choral music, which was, you know, like four-part harmony and instruments and all that stuff. And this is one or two parts that kind of overlap and maybe make a little harmony. And some people can create harmony. But it's very simple and really joyful and, you know, it creates community in that sense that we're just there singing and we don't have to work so hard at it.
And you're meeting every Monday.
Yes.
Wow. Snow or not?
Absolutely.
Hopefully now it's just going to be sun.
Yeah, that we made really it through nice. March. It was very snowy, but we made it through.
Yeah. And Jenny, tell me a little bit about your involvement in the group.
Okay. Well, I am the local chapter chair for PFLAG Juneau. And PFLAG basically backed the Pride Chorus all those years. They're actually an integral part of PFLAG, which is a LGBTQ community and ally support organization. So what we do is support, educate, and advocate for civil rights for the LGBTQ plus community. And, yeah, I asked, you know, after the pandemic, the Pride Chorus just kind of died down and there was some interest, but nobody wanted to take the lead. So I nudge.
Have you been poking the bear like for a while here?
A little bit. We ended up in the same choral group for a little while and you know, Leslie.
You just casually dropping like, hey, you know, Leslie, what do you think about?
Yeah, she was part of it. And besides that, she led our community chorus one night and she is fantastic. Mm. She connects with everybody. She's got a smile on her face. She makes it fun, lively, and she knows what she's doing to bring out the best in everybody. And so it's just been a really great experience. And I'm really grateful that she got this going. It's got some momentum. So we have a little more participation again and trying to carry that forward so we can make a bigger difference in our community.
And at this point, Leslie, there's no public performances. This is just a group to get together and share.
Right. I don't expect the group to be performing. If we want to, we can do that. But actually, tomorrow I'll be leading a song at the protest that's happening at the Whale Park. And there will be the members of Singing for Our Lives dispersed among the crowd to help lead the sing or, you know, carry the singing.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
And the song we're going to sing is very easily, and most people probably recognize it.
You're giving me flash mob memories.
We won't be dancing.
And you know, just to, you know, create that accessibility to sing. I think that's a great way for people. And my heart is with the LGBT community, of course. And so that's why I wanted to call it Singing for Our Lives. And the inspiration for that was a Holly Near song that she wrote for Harvey Milk's memorial in 1978 after he was brutally murdered. And she wrote the song on her way and she performed it there. And it's been one of the LGBT anthems ever since. And so that's where I got the name. And also, I mean, I was inspired by the singing resistance music movement that's been coming most recently out of Minnesota, but it's been going on for decades. And that was really inspiring, but I also wanted to broaden it to, you know, songs of healing and songs of support and solidarity and not just the resistance, but that is a part of it. And so we'll be singing songs that apply to these times, you know, current music that's easy to sing that expresses what we need to say now. And so that's been really exciting. I've been finding some great music and they're really fun to sing. They include clapping sometimes and, you know, just some really great messages that we're hearing ourselves sing. We're getting it sung to our, you know, by our friends nearby. And also we can get it out to the world if we get more people to come. So.
And Jenny, what's do you have like a favorite song that you like to sing in the group?
Oh, geez.
It's probably a long list.
She's got quite a repertoire. Well, yeah. I like We Rise. Uh-huh. Yeah. I think that's one of the ones, you know, in hope, in prayer, we find ourselves here. In hope, in prayer, We're right here, we rise, humbly hearted. So it just goes on with a lot of uplifting, strengthening kind of lyrics.
Yeah.
And it's a song of community, and we're here for each other, we're here for you, and we're going to stand up and be somebody. We're not just going to take this stuff lying down.
Right. Leslie, what makes a good... Like, I guess I'm curious, like, in terms of, like, a resistance song, what makes a good one?
I don't know. I'm really brand new at this. But what I like is that it's, you know, sending the message that we're together, we're standing up, we're not going to leave people behind. Anybody can join us. A lot of the songs are, you can change your mind at any time and come to join us, join the resistance. If people are on the fence, they don't know where they fall in this decision about where they stand, they can, you know, come and sing with us, and we can, you know, pull them into the resistance. And I think that it's really important to do something every week. You know, to not just like, oh, once in a while we sing, but this is something that'll sustain the energy so that people can go to those, you know, community meetings and go to the things that we need to do to help each other through this time. And so that's what I want, like finding music that has that message. And the Singing Resistance has a whole big work songbook that I've printed out, and I can just search for those songs online and learn them. And I've been learning them one by one and bringing them to the group. And so we've been having a lot of fun with that.
What about the songs of, like, healing and things like that? Are there certain ones that you have? Where do you find those songs?
I've been finding a lot of songs on a podcast called A Breath of Song Podcast.
Mm.
And the person who runs that has 200 some episodes.
Oh, wow.
And so I've been listening to them and learning the songs, because she teaches a song each time. And and like one of the songs that we sing is called What a Gift It Is to Sing. And it's like, I'm just singing with you, and I can sing with you when I'm happy. I can sing with you when I'm sad. And it's such a gift to be able to sing with you. And that's just like, you know, it's an upbeat song, but also it tells a message like, yeah, I get blue sometimes, and I don't want to be here sometimes, but we're going to sing and we're going to make it through. Mm. And that's the message that I want to send.
The power of music is amazing. Like, yeah. It is just what it does to your body. It's just amazing.
The biology is there.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I was talking to a musical therapist a couple years ago, and I just thought it was such a great idea, the work that can be done with music and therapy and people who are recovering from trauma or, you know, accidents, or who can't speak anymore, but they can, you know, it's just amazing what music can do, like what it makes you feel.
Well, it makes you breathe slower, which calms you down. And it also, you know, I've been hearing a lot about the biology, but it releases oxytocin, which is a connecting hormone. So it connects people. And that's what we need. We need more connection and less division. And just that is enough. Like, just sing. And if you like to sing, come and sing with other people. It gets even better, because you're doing it with each other and you can make connections. And so that's what I'm hoping to let your listeners know, is that you can join us, try it out, see if you like it. And it's really easy, really fun, and there's lots of good snacks.
Yeah,
and we have time to make connections. So I just want people to know they can come and join us anytime.
And you don't have to register or anything. You just show up Mondays.
No, just show up.
Show up Mondays, 6:30 to 8:30 at Dezakatahini. School in the music room for now, but maybe moving depending upon group size. You do have an email that I want to let people know about, singing.for.our.lives@juno@protonmail.com.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. So it's Singing for Our Lives, Juno, with dots in between each word, @protonmail.com. If you have any questions, or if you wanted to find out more information, and that email probably goes to Leslie and she'll answer you, right?
Yes.
Okay, great. That's so fantastic. Get out there Monday at 6:30, right? That's so cool. Singing for Our Lives, a new group here in Juneau. I love it. I love the energy behind that. So, Jenny, Leslie, going to teach for being here. Is there anything else we needed to mention?
I don't think so. I think the best part is the connection. I mean, and you just leave feeling good.
Yeah.
You leave feeling good.
I think the last thing I want to say is that, you know, you might not know people who are going, but you'll meet them there. They'll become friends instantly. And also, when you leave, you'll be energized.
Mm, okay. That's
all
really
ages
cool.
Too.
All ages. That's so mm-hmm. cool.
All genders.
Well, Gunathish for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And speaking of new groups, this week's Tongass Voices, Perspectives from the Homeland of the Akwan and Beyond. Earlier this year, Robin De Alva made a Facebook group that she says addresses a specific issue in Juneau, the challenge of finding and offloading arts and craft supplies in the wake of Juneau's Joanne store closing last year. The group is called Juneau Art Supply and Exchange and has nearly 300 members. The idea to start the group came from her search for a very specific crafting item, beeswax.
My name is Robin De Alva, and I created this group as the, I guess, admin. I'm not an avid social media person. per se. So I'm new at this, and the group's grown pretty fast. So my art supplies, I shipped all up here from Seattle. I had a career as an artist in Seattle, but they were in storage for over a decade. And it was just a year and a half ago that I unearthed everything and found a studio space. Currently, you know, I just am trying to unravel what kind of artist I was then and who I am now, and, you know, everything that's changed along the way. And looking at all of this art supply that I have was kind of overwhelming. So I do encaustic art, and I have a lot in the past. Encaustic, it's you use beeswax in a molten form, and you tint it with pigments, and you paint with it while it's hot. It's actually an ancient form of painting, like dating back to the Egyptians, where they would paint portraits on the outside of the sarcophaguses. It's a unique medium, that's for sure. There's something about it. The smell of the beeswax, the mixing of the colors is something that I love to do. And then the layering. So there's, you know, a lot of translucency, but you build layers and dimension, and it can even carve into it. It just has like a world of possibilities. So that's what attracts me to it. What triggered this idea was I'm running out of beeswax. And I thought, I know there's got to be some other encaustic artists in this town. So I reached out on the existing artist groups in town, local artist groups on Facebook, and nobody responded. It's been, you know, like a few years and nobody's responded to my call out. So especially with, you know, the closures of some of our local art supply stores, I thought, well, let me try this out. Let me reach out and see if I can find anybody that way. So that's actually what triggered the whole creation of the group. Initially, it was really so moving in the beginning. And on the note of other buy sell trade groups, I posted or shared the group there, and over 2 days, you know, we got like almost 300 members. So it's super exciting. And also, I hear all the comments, you know, people joining, and people are really excited. And to see all the variety, the like wide array of what people are doing in town is amazing. There's a lot of metalsmithing going on, anything from jewelry making to armor, you know, that sort of thing. And a lot of costume makers. And then also teachers or people that work with, you know, the elderly and senior groups doing crafting, and, you know, parents just looking for crafts for their kids. And this is just what ifs, or, you know, later down the line, if this became a possibility, it would be cool to do maybe larger community group gatherings like swaps, or working with other groups like the Makerspace, you know, and maybe even doing some creative events. But obviously that's just like an idea for the future possibility.
That was Robin De Alva, who started an online craft supplies swapping community. And just FYI, she's still in search of that beeswax. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death, located in the Juneau Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO, dedicated to Kellen Hobbs Peterson. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. On this sunny day, it is priming us for spring, yeah? And one amazing place that we all love to visit when it's a little warmer outside is the Jensen Olsen Arboretum, and they are also getting primed and ready for spring and summer. Ginger Hudson, the manager, is here to bring us all the warmth and goodness. Gunath chi, shwa sia ti. How are you today, Ginger?
Great. It's so sunny. It's hard not to feel good on this day, isn't it?
I do get, we get that, with that vitamin D, we get mm-hmm. that charge from mm-hmm. the sun. It feels so good, and we've been through such pain. Do you have a lot of snow out there?
Still quite a bit of snow out the road, 2 to 3 feet on the grounds at the Arboretum. It's hard to even imagine that someday there will be flowers.
But there will.
There will.
We must have faith in that.
Yes.
And so how does it work over the winter? Does basically the Arboretum just kind of closed down? Like, people can't, there's nothing really to see, right? So they don't really visit.
Right. It's covered in snow and blowing wind most of the time. We do close down for a couple months in the winter and then reopen New Year's. Now this year, because of our fabulous wealth of snow, we had to delay our open for winter hours, which are just weekends. Mm. But at least people can have a little stop when they're driving out the road to see what's going on.
Yeah.
But the big news is coming up Wednesday, April 1st, no joke, the Arboretum will be changing over to summer hours. Again, hard to believe, but if you would like to visit Wednesday through Sunday, 9 to 5, there are paths cut in the snow.
Well, hopefully it's going to warm up and some of that stuff will go away. It'll get mm-hmm. clearer and clearer as you go. So that's good. News is that you're opening next Wednesday. I forgot it was April Fool's even on Wednesday, but
yep.
you say no fooling. We're opening the Arboretum on Wednesday, and the hours again, Wednesday through Sunday, 9 to 5.
Correct.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And when do the things start to get going in terms of blooming and such like that?
Well, what is really frustrating is in between the snowstorms, the snowdrops and the crocuses had started to show, and now they have been reburied.
We had that false spring, right?
Yes.
It was like a couple weeks where it was like, okay, mm-hmm. we're done. But then all mm-hmm. of a sudden we went, mm-mm. yeah, okay.
Then it all went south.
Yeah.
So
they popped out and then they said, no way, thank you.
And some of those flowers are really determined. The snowdrops, they could be actually blooming under the snow.
Mm.
The snow is a little blanket of air and space that protects them from the super cold air up above. So they can still have things going on while they're waiting for all that white stuff to go away. But once the snow does clear, we'll see crocus and then our fabulous primrose collection will be quick on the heels.
Wow, that's amazing. Was it last year that you had the big primrose gathering? Was that last year?
Yes, okay. It was last year. I know, hard to believe that too. Already a year in the past, we had a wonderful turnout for people that love primroses. People came from all over the state, even a few who came from out of state and out of country.
Yeah, that was like the Primrose International
National Show
that.
And Conference.
Yeah,
yes.
That's amazing.
Yes.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Well, we love that we have those here. So opening next Wednesday, and then you've got some cool stuff coming up, right, in terms of programs. Tell me a little bit about what you got going on.
So in addition to opening April 1st for regular hours, it is our 19th anniversary year. So anybody who hasn't been out there yet, please come out. Hard to believe that sometimes people don't realize we're here.
Mm.
The first little event is we're looking for volunteers on April 25th, and that is hosted by the Friends of Jensen Olsen Arboretum to help start cleaning the grounds for Mother's Day, which is our really big event. That will be May 10th this year.
May 10th.
Will have refreshments and music, and that also is hosted by the Friends of Jensen Olsen Arboretum and their website to keep up with everything. In addition to CBJ's Parks and Rec socials, the friendsjoarboretum.org is where you can find out more about events that the Friends help us with. They're an independent nonprofit, and their volunteers really help bring the Arboretum to life. With our staff, city staff is limited, so these volunteer groups really make things shine.
Well, it's good to mention this, too, for people who may not know that Jensen Olsen Arboretum is under the Parks and Rec Department of the city. You are a city park, in essence.
Yeah, thanks for backing up on that. Yeah, let's let everybody know we are a city and Borough of Juneau Parks and Recreation Facility. Mm-hmm. The property was the first conservation easement land set up between Caroline, the donor, and Southeast Alaska Land Trust. So we're eternally grateful to Caroline, the land trust, and then she turned over management of operations to the city.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's good to know. Right on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Mother's Day's huge.
Okay, Mother's Day's huge, yeah. But for plant nerds who just can't wait to come see plants growing, May 9th is the community plant sale. Everybody should know about that. That is held in the parking lot at Safeway, and friends of Jensen Olsen Arboretum, in addition to myself, will be there to answer questions and talk about events coming up in the summer. And the friends of Jensen Olsen Arboretum also produce a lot of our family education programs. We hope to nail down those dates in the next week. So all of our regulars look forward to tide pooling with families, Bug Day, and possibly Junior Naturalist. And we are also working again with Theater Alaska. We don't have a date set yet. So everybody, of course, keep up on your socials. But the last 3 years, we've been graced with the presence of Theater Alaska in the gardens, performing several Shakespearean plays, and it has just been fabulous.
Yeah, I loved I was in Pride and Prejudice that we did out there.
Yes.
And sort of a new adaptation of that where I played Mrs. Bennett, which was insane. but it was so fun, and we got lucky. It was a beautiful day. Mm-hmm. You know, you get 100-something people out there just, you know, in the garden. It's so it was so fantastic to be out there for that. And so that'll happen probably in later summer, right? Mm-hmm. Somewhere in there.
Yes.
You're not sure on the date yet.
Not sure on the date. Yeah. It's been beginning of July lately.
Somewhere around there.
And
okay.
Yeah, Boston, you were fabulous. The whole troop was fabulous. And yes, always a gorgeous evening and so happy to have
you. You just hope that there's no rain.
That's all we hope for.
No rain.
Yes.
But it'll happen, rain or shine. I know that they did it that way. So they've done it in the rain before. That's so cool. And so these kids programs are coming up. And so the best way for people to follow for information on the upcoming classes and things when you announce those, is that like the City Parks and Rec website, or is it their Facebook or other socials, or is it better to follow like the Friends, joarboretum.org, like you mentioned?
Both will be
okay.
The best.
Okay.
Not the main City Parks and Rec Facebook, but the Jensen Olsen Arboretum Facebook, which
okay.
is a part of Parks,
right.
Parks and Rec, but JOA does have its own Facebook, and they will have the events as well as the Friends of Jensen Olsen Arboretum, and that's their whole name on Facebook, Friends of Jensen Olsen Arboretum. That's how you would look them up.
Okay.
And folks will have to register for those. There's not a fee, but we need to keep track of how many people are going to be showing up so we have all the supplies that we need for all the
Absolutely.
Families.
Yeah. I'm so excited you're here, Ginger, because it means that spring is really happening.
Look at the flowers. I know you got video cameras.
Yeah.
Just imagine this coming soon.
It's been a long winter, so you are a breath of fresh air, and we're so happy to have you here. Is there anything else that we need to mention for the Arboretum today?
Well, I want to mention my new sister arboretum, I guess you could call it.
Oh.
You know, 2 years ago, the Evergreen Cemetery became certified as arboretum.
Oh.
So we're even though we have arboretum as in our name, we don't just make that up. It is certified through a university who surveys what you have planted and makes sure you're educating people on woody plants and trees. So anyway, Alaska Arbor Day is May 18th. And at the Cemetery Arboretum, they'll be planting trees with school groups, and which segues me into another school group. I know you talked to the Tlingit Cultural Learning Language kids earlier this week, and I want to let everyone know that another fun thing they get to do is come out to the Arboretum and plant Tlingit potatoes.
Oh, that's so
and
great.
And that'll be coming up in May.
Okay, that's really cool.
Yeah.
That's such great news. Ginger, thank you so much. Gunathchish, for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're going to go out today here on Juno Afternoon with a little Buddy Tabor. This is Love Song for Alaska on Juno Afternoon.
Been sitting here lately, lost inside the dreams, the promise of your return when winter turns to spring. When the sun it starts to shine and the tide flats are supreme, in the warmer days when the salmon migrate up the stream. My love is real, love is fine, flows like a river deep inside my mind. Ptarmigan are nesting, and the wild geese are in flight. In search of the Northland, they've come home once again. But you know they're gonna leave us on that first cold winter's wind. My love is real, love is fine, flows like a river deep inside my mind. Love is fine, flows like a river deep inside my mind. My love for this great land runs deep inside my veins, like a wild and rushing river, it's crazy and insane. Fireweed on the hillside has set itself ablaze, evaporates into the sun, bright and yellow haze. My love is real, love is fine, flows like a river deep inside my mind. My love is real, love is fine.
That's going to do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Quick programming note, next Tuesday, March 31st, join us for a special Juno Afternoon. It will be led by guest host Christina Love and feature representatives from AWARE, the Child Advocacy Center, and Tlingit and Haida. This hour-long special will cover the topic of sexual violence and prevention. That's Tuesday, March 31st at 3 and 7 o'clock here on KTOO. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Ok Bay 91.7. You can find the show online at kto.org/JunoAfternoon. You can also find live stream archives on KTO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you and Country Financial, Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Tongass Federal Credit Union. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunathchish! Have a fantastic Juno weekend.